This is Digital Story Podcast number 825, January 11th, 2022. Today's theme is The Joy of Everyday HDR. I'm Derek Story. Thanks to the ease of HDR merging in both Lightroom and now in Capture One Pro 22, leveraging the advantages of high dynamic range photography doesn't have to be a special occasion activity. You can use it whenever you want a little more tonal range. How to easily do that is the first topic of today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. If I told you about some of my HDR workflows of the past, you would laugh, you would get a giggle. And the reason why is because I haven't had HDR merging built in to my everyday photo management application. When I was an Aputure user, it wasn't in there. I never became a Lightroom user, so I didn't get to take advantage of it. I've used Aurora HDR, Photomatics. I mean, I've done all sorts of stuff for HDR. I've used the in-camera HDR mode. And I have to tell you that because of this cumbersome workflow, because that it was just a pain in the rear, I never shot as much HDR as I really wanted to. Now, one of the things that I got turned on to, thanks to Lightroom, was that you can do HDR and just get a really nice RAW file, DNG file, that you can do all sorts of stuff with in post-processing. And when I saw that, when I saw how Lightroom and Adobe approached high dynamic range photography, I go, that is really cool. I really like that. And the way that I would do it is that I would shoot my bracketed frames. Now, with the Adobe app, you really only have to do 2 frames, they say. I still do 3 frames. A lot of people do 5 and 7. You don't need to do that with either Lightroom or Capture One Pro. And I'm going to get more into the details in a few moments. But I do my 3-frame bracket. All the images would go into Capture One Pro. I would export out the RAW files out of Capture One Pro, open them up in Lightroom. I use Lightroom CC, which now has HDR merge. I used to have to use Lightroom Classic, which is even more of a pain in the rear for me. Do my merge, do my editing there, export out a DNG, take it back into Capture One Pro where I catalog it with the rest of my stuff. I mean, really, it's no wonder I wasn't shooting very much HDR. Now, Lightroom users, of course, have had it much easier because they have it built right into their application. So what I'm going to talk about today, you all have been able to do for some time. For the rest of us who use Capture One Pro or some other application that may have it built in, today is the day where we get to use it for just everyday photography. Now, why would I want to do that? Why would I want to capture an HDR for everyday photography? Well, you have to do it for a while to really appreciate how cool it is. And some of the scenes that I've been shooting lately, normally, they would be very nice RAW files. Very nice RAW files, right? You know, it's maybe a little bit of a bright sky because it's a partly overcast day. The shadows are a little deeper than I want. Maybe the top surfaces where the light is catching are a little too bright. But generally speaking, with a normal RAW file, you can work around, you know, these sort of issues and kind of get it the way that you want. Then I shoot it as a 3-frame bracket and play with it in Capture One Pro 22 using HDR merge. And I go, wow, this file, this image is so much easier to tame. And it doesn't have to be over the top. It doesn't have to look fake. In fact, now I can get it looking more like my eyes saw it than I could even a regular RAW file. And that's why I go, you know what? What I want to do is create a workflow for myself that's so easy that I would never hesitate to shoot an HDR merge bracket because I don't want to have technique or, you know, workflow get in the way of really coming away with the best shot possible. So I start kind of playing around with that. Now I'm going to give you a workflow that I'm using right now for the Fujifilm X100V in Capture One Pro 22. But you can substitute Lightroom for Capture One Pro 22, this workflow works. And you can substitute any camera that makes it easy to auto bracket for the Fujifilm camera. So I'm just gonna use those two as my examples because that's what I use, but then substitute your own software and camera for the process. Now the idea is to make this so easy that you would do it when you're just doing your everyday shots. It doesn't have to be a special occasion, right? So let's start with the capture. Let's start with capturing the frames. Now for Capture One Pro 22, when I talked to them about their HDR merge, they were very clear on what you needed to do. They're saying three frames, two stops apart. So, you know, minus two, zero, plus two on your exposure bracket. That's all you need to do. You don't need to do anything else. So I said, okay, I'm just going to embrace that. I'm just going to do what you're saying and see how it goes. Well, as it turns out, they're right. And funny thing that they're right because, well, you know, they designed the software. I had usually done EV plus 1.5 and minus, you know, I don't know why I had fooled around with all these different things, five frames, all that kind of stuff. This just simplified it for me. So I go plus two, minus two, zero. Alrighty. Now, what I do on my camera is that it's really easy on the X100V because you just go to drive mode, you just, you know, go to drive mode and then you scroll down to bracket and it's BKT. And you choose from that little menu there, AEBKT. Now you can bracket all sorts of things, white balance, all this stuff. Just choose the AE bracket. So it takes 2 seconds to do this. Press the drive button, down you go to bracket, choose AE bracket. And then you just press the OK button. And now when you press the shutter, you'll go boom, 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 and you do three frames. Now I don't have to worry about the bracket range because I've already set that. So, you know, that's already established. And where that is, in case you shoot with a Fujifilm camera, is you go to the menu, and then you go to shooting setting, and that's the one with the little camera icon. You choose AE bracket setting, and then there's a frames slash step setting. And all you do on that is you choose plus minus three frames, in two steps. So three frames in two steps. So that gives you the negative 2.0, the zero, the plus 2.0. Once you set that, it's sticky. The camera will remember that until you change it. Now I've had some cameras that didn't remember my bracket thing, although most of them that I use now do. My Olympus cameras remember the bracketing sequence. But however your camera works, the thing that you want to do is make it easy. So for instance, if you have a custom function mode, maybe you set up your auto bracket in custom function. And then that way you can have other settings that you want as well. But however is the easiest way, because what you want to do is go back and forth between bracketing and not bracketing as quickly as possible. So if I'm out shooting, I'm shooting, taking a picture. Oh, that's lovely. That's like, ooh, that looks like a good one for HDR merge. Press the drive button, choose AE bracket, shoot that sequence, press the drive button again, go back to single frame. I'm off to the races. Okay. Now, it's very easy to pick these out when they come into your PhotoManagement application because one is really bright, one is really dark, and one will be fairly normal. So, so they're not hard to figure out, you know, later on. You don't have to take any notes or do anything like that. One thing that is important, and this is also regardless whatever camera you're shooting with, is that you want to work in aperture priority mode when you're capturing your brackets. Now, I shoot in aperture priority mode most of the time So this isn't an issue. But the reason why you want to do that is you want to tell the camera to bracket the frames by shutter speed, not aperture. And so depending on what camera you have, if you're in program mode, the camera may say, hey, I can bracket these frames any way that I want. I can use a combination of changing the aperture or the shutter speed or, you know, whatever. So you want to lock it down and tell the camera what I want you to do is I want you to bracket the shutter speed, leave my f-stop alone. Again, in the X100V, I just set it on the f-stop that I want, usually around 5, 6, 8, something like that. And then in drive mode, it will auto bracket by shutter speed. And you can check this after you shoot the sequence to make sure that in all three shots, the aperture is the same, but the shutter speed is what's changing. Why do you want to do that? Well, when you change your aperture or the aperture changes during the sequence, well, little things like depth of field change as well. And knowing that you're going to merge these frames together, you really want them to be all the same aperture so that you get the sharpest merge possible. So aperture priority mode is definitely the way to go when you're merging. Alrighty, so there's that. Now, once you do that, and let's say that you are trying out the Merge in Capture One Pro, it's really easy. They all come into the application. You just click on the three frames, that's your exposure bracket, and then you just right-click on one of them and you choose Merge to HDR from the pop-up menu. And off to the races you go. A second pop-up shows up. Gives you the options to auto-align and to auto-adjust. I usually just check them both. A lot of times my HDR merges are handheld shots. I'm not necessarily tripodding it. I will lean against something or use something to steady the camera, but the frames are captured so quickly that unless you're really, you know, jiggling around here, you should be okay, especially with the auto-align box checked. Again, very similar, very easy in Lightroom 2. Just a few little options, and then you click OK, and it merges the file. And in both applications, you get a nice DNG file. Now, when you have Auto Adjust selected in Capture One Pro, it will do auto adjustment to that merged file based on whatever auto-adjust things you have selected. And auto-adjust in Capture One Pro is a really nice feature. It's something that we're going to talk about the first day of our workshop because I feel like it's so underutilized and it is a fantastic tool. You can use it for your HDR merges. You can use it when you import images into your application. You can use it in all sorts of places. And you have control over what it auto-adjusts. It can adjust exposure, it can auto-align, it can do all sorts of things. You get to select. So then what happens is then your merge shows up and it's looking pretty darn good. It's pretty darn good. And you have this really rich RAW file, and this is in both Lightroom and Capture One Pro. You have this really rich RAW file that now you can do anything with. And one of my favorite exercises to do, especially when I was testing this in the beginning, is to take that merge file, do some basic edits on it, and then compare it to the regular RAW file, because in the bracket, the middle bracket or the middle frame is your regular exposure. It's at zero, right? So you have a RAW file there to test against. And this is really fun to do, especially if you're questioning, is it worth the extra trouble or not to do HDR merges for everyday photography? Edit up that merged file and then edit up that zero file, that single RAW file, and then just look at them and see what you think. What I have noticed in my shooting is that I, every time, like that HDR merged file better. I just have more things to do. I just have, you know, I can pull out little things that I want, or if I don't want to, I can do that. I just have control. I just have control over how that image is going to look. More control than with just the regular RAW file, which is pretty darn good. This is, as we say, you know, a luxury problem, right? This is because you know, we can just keep shooting RAW to our heart's content and really have some very nice files and come up with some very nice prints and all that kind of stuff. And the whole point of the first story today is that with a little bit extra work, you can really have better results. And that's an equation that I like. A little bit extra work, maybe a lot of bit better finished product. My English is really going south on me here, so I'm going to stop this segment and move on to the next thing. But everyday HDR, set up a little workflow, play with it, compare it to your basic RAW file, and see what you think. See what you think. I'm having a blast with it. Remove power lines with ease, thanks to Luminar Neo. Now, I haven't done my review of Luminar Neo yet. I'm going to. I've been playing with Capture One Pro 22 lately because our workshop starts on Wednesday. So I really wanted to make sure I was up to speed on that, which I think is always a good idea before you start a workshop. But Neo is next on my list, and I'm going to start playing with it. But I found this article on PhotoFocus, and I want to share it with you because one of the things that it has in it is pretty slick. Let me read you what the guy says on PhotoFocus here. In the new Luminar Neo, Skylum has added some great new tools to help you save time. One of these is the ability to move power lines from images. You can find this tool in the Erase tab located under Essential Tools. Then you can click Remove Power Lines under the Object Removal section. So they actually have a Remove Power Lines choice. This is great, right? To test the tool, I found an old photo of a NASA rocket. I wanted to see if the AI would remove the cables holding the rocket. I simply clicked on the Remove Power Lines button. After about 5 to 10 seconds of the AI working, the cables were successfully removed. This is certainly an efficient feature. He used the exclamation point there for that. The clouds, blue patches, overexposed areas, and painted lines on the rocket did not confuse the software. So, and then he goes on and he does more examples. He does a little movie about all of this. So he's really into this power lines feature. And as I said, you can read the entire article on PhotoFocus. The link is in the show notes and you can see everything that he has to offer. But I wasn't even aware that this was a feature of Luminar Neo. So I think this is pretty cool. So then I went over to the Luminar site just to see what the deal is, because I know that the full version of Neo isn't out yet, because I get mail from these people. And where we are right now is you can buy a preliminary release of Luminar Neo for $79 right now, start playing with it, and then they said the final version will be made available to you in February. So you get the preliminary version now, you go ahead and pay now, get the preliminary version, and then the final version's out in February. I'm going to start testing it pretty soon, hopefully as early as this week, but maybe not till next week. We'll see how things go. And then I'll post a review of my initial impressions on it. You know, one of my questions about Luminar Neo is, you know, how many things do I get in this that I would use that are different than the version of Luminar I have right now? That's going to be the big question. That's what I'm going to be looking at. This power lines thing, though, remove power lines thing, that's kind of nice. And if it works as well as this author on PhotoFocus says, that's kind of a cool deal. The 2022 TDS Workshop season is taking shape. I've been talking about the last couple weeks. I just want to review the workshops that we have on the docket now with more coming. In March, we're going to do Writing for Online Publishing. That'll be an online workshop. In April, we're going to go to the Humboldt Redwoods for a physical workshop. This is a workshop I am just jonesing to happen. I cannot wait for this workshop to come in April. In May, we're going to do infrared photography online. In August, we're going to do the ultimate black and white workshop. That will include black and white IR as well. In September, we're going to the Eastern Sierra for a physical workshop. Hallelujah, I cannot wait. And then in November, we're returning to the Oregon coast again. The workshop that reminded me of how great physical workshops were last November, we're going again this November. All the details are on our workshops page. You can just click on workshops at the Digital Story, or you can go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on workshops there. Review everything that's going on, reserve your spot, and join us. I'd love to see you in either an online or physical workshop this year. Let's make 2022 the year that we really push the ball forward. We've had to innovate in a lot of different areas. We've had to adjust and acclimate and do all those things. Now, let's have some fun and really get better at our craft. Nikon, Panasonic, absent from Japan's best-selling cameras of 2021. And this is an article that's on Petapixel. You can read the whole thing there. I have the link in the show notes. Let me read you a little bit about what they're saying here. This article caught my eye for sure. BCN plus R, a large retailer and holder of one of the largest databases of electronic sales in Japan, has published the top 10 cameras sold in 2021. Notably absent from the list are Nikon and Panasonic. BCN plus R regularly publishes trend and sales reports across multiple electronic markets, including cameras. While it shouldn't be taken as the end-all of Japanese sales reports, the company does command about 40% of the Japanese sales market, which does make it a very solid indication of what products are popular. For what it's worth, no such ranking like this exists in the United States, as no retailer or dealer is willing or able to share its sales data publicly. That's too bad. I'd love to see that data. So while it's not the best data, it is some of the only data that those interested in the industry trends tend to get. I'm going to give you this list here in a second. As noted by Imaging Resources, it's important to keep a couple things in mind before taking a look at the results. First, the camera market in Japan is extremely different than that in North America or Europe. Japanese sales regularly show smaller compact cameras tend to be extremely popular, while the larger and more professional bodies that sell well in the United States are not nearly as sought after. Also of note is that BCN plus R's list includes multiple variations of the same product through kits, standalone cameras, and even color options. As a result, these numbers might be skewed a bit. All right, that being said though, let's take a look at this list because it's kind of fun, all right? Top 10 sellers in Japan in 2021 start out with the Sony A6400 double zoom lens kit. That was number one. Canon EOS KISS M2 double zoom kit, the white version. Wow, the white version. Okay. Then in number three, Canon EOS KISS M double zoom kit. So the M2 and then the M. Sony A6400 double zoom lens kit silver. Sony ZV-E10 power zoom lens kit. Then the Canon EOS KISS M2 double zoom kit in black. And Canon EOS KISS M double zoom kit. So the M2 and the M in both, in different colorways are all top sellers. So basically what you can say here is that the Canon M2 and the Canon M are big sellers, and the Sony A6400 a big seller, and the Sony ZV-E10 power zoom a big seller. All right, so those, and then we have three more here that are not these weird variations. or actually, one of them is. So then Fujifilm has the X-A5 lens kit, the silver one, that comes in, and then Olympus is in there with the Olympus Pen EPL10 EZ double zoom kit, and then the Fujifilm X-A5 lens kit again, but the brown version versus the silver version. So in this crazy list with all the stuff that I just read you, we have a handful of cameras that dominated the Japanese sales. And that to me does feel very different than North America. So now, let's get back to the article. Obviously, the aforementioned repetition of products is obvious here, as I've been articulating. Sony and Canon both have products that show up twice, which potentially squeezes out the potential for the two camera companies that are noticeably absent here, Nikon and Panasonic. Both companies released cameras that would have theoretically been popular in Japan last year. Nikon released the ZFC, while Panasonic launched the GH5-2. Both companies could be absent from this list for a few reasons. They didn't have the different variations or all that kind of stuff. Fact of the matter is, they're not there. One thing to note is that not a single full-frame camera made it to the top-selling cameras in Japan, which further highlights the difference in the Eastern and Western camera markets. That said, Imaging Resource reports that the Sony A7 IV, the Sony A7 III, and the Canon EOS RP have all made the top-selling list of cameras from BCN plus R last month. So it's possible that the transition to full-frame is coming along in Japan, albeit slowly. So I just thought that was interesting. I'm a big Nikon fan in what they're doing right now. I'm a big Panasonic fan in what they're doing. And I thought it was interesting that they got aced out of this 2021 list. I do not think that is going to happen in 2022. I think we will see them both there. We will revisit this article if we get an updated version of it. But those are the cameras that are selling in Japan right now. Those of you listening in that live in Japan, it would be interesting to hear your thoughts on this. You can comment on our Facebook page, the Digital Story Facebook page, where I'll post this podcast. And those of you in North America, you're probably going, what? All right, a little virtual camera club news. I want to start out by thanking our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support this podcast in this community month after month. They're the ones that keep the terrible ads out of our podcast and let us just talk about photography and good stuff. They're the ones that help me craft our workshop season and the other activities that we do. And we have new members joining us all the time. Those of you that are coming on board, thank you so much for starting out your 2022 as a supporter of the Digital Story community. Those of you that are long-time supporters, long-time Inner Circle members, thank you even more for being a part of this and for helping keep this community afloat and headed in the right direction. If you want to become part of the Inner Circle, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Take a look around, and hopefully you will join us this year. I want to talk about the film camera shop, which I took a little hiatus from it. There were so many weird things going on during the holidays in terms of shipping, in terms of delays, in terms of my own personal life, that I just said, you know what? I'm just going to pause the film camera shop. I put it in vacation mode for all of December and said, I will return in January, and we'll start out anew once all the dust settles and everything that's happening. The camera shop actually will launch. Well, if you're listening to this podcast on Tuesday, it launches Tuesday, so I'm reopening it. I have lots of cool stuff that I've put together that I've been working on during the hiatus. I have some fantastic donations from Inner Circle members. That's going to be unveiled in the grand reopening of the film camera shop. And it's just good to have it open again. The reason why I mention this, that if you've done some end of year cleaning up around your house or around your workshop, and you've discovered some film camera gear that isn't being used, and you would like to get it into the hands of people who would love to have it, these folks that shop the film camera shop and buy the equipment there, they are so excited about analog photography, and you know they express that in their notes to me when they, you know, are inquiring about different pieces of equipment or celebrating the purchase that they just made. If you want to get your stuff that isn't being used into the hands of people who will use it, all you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on the contact form there, let me know what you have, and then I'll get back to you. Then I will send you a donation kit that includes the box, includes a prepaid label. All you have to do is tape up the box, put your gear inside, put the label on it, and then let the Postal Service know to pick it up at your doorstep next time they deliver mail, and off to the races we go. A big thanks to those of you who have donated in the past, and if you have something that you would love to get out into the world, into someone who would cherish it, again, go to nimblephotographer.com, thenimblephotographer.com, click on the contact form, and we will take it from there. And finally, a big shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, the longest running sponsor of The Digital Story. These are the folks that provide the printing paper, the ink, the accessories, all that kind of stuff. I read an interesting article that, you know, I was thinking about our friends at Red River Paper today, because Canon, because of the chip shortage, you know, they use chips in their cartridges, in their ink and toner cartridges, and to, you know, identify that this is a authentic Canon cartridge and so forth. They're running out of chips or their cartridges, and they're actually telling customers how to work around that issue. I just thought that was kind of funny, because that can be an annoyance, especially when you buy an official cartridge and then somehow it malfunctions and the chip tells you that it's not official. And you go, wait a minute, I just paid like $25 for this ink cartridge. Anyway, Red River Paper, they have an inventory of all this stuff. If you need ink, you can get it there when you buy your paper. It's so convenient just to have one-stop shopping for everything. They also have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Get your inkjet printing on with these guys. Make some art that you can put in other people's hands. Make some art that will stand the test of time. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for sponsoring this show. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed our Everyday HDR and working on some cool stuff for next week. Until then, stay safe, be creative, try this stuff out, and then come back next Tuesday. Until then, bye-bye now.